she said. He raised the cleaver over his head. The blade fell swiftly onto the lamb with an ear-splitting thwack.
"We will crush the Russian plague."
"I heard the Tsar sent his son here bearing gifts and empty promises,"
one of the men said. The butcher swung his cleaver, and it again hit the meat with a resounding smack.
"Bring the Cesarevich to me, and I'll show the Tsar what we think of their gifts. I'll skin his son like a lamb and send his carcass back with a bowl tied on top."
The men had whooped and roared. Then they had discovered Pasha, and he tried to convince them he wasn't a Russian spy. When they didn't believe him, fisticuffs ensued. Yuliana had stopped listening as carefully when Pasha got into the gory and glorious details of his fight. Followed by a mad dash through the trading post, and Pasha successfully evading the last of his pursuers to return safely to camp. The Imperial Army had left the Kazakh steppe soon after that. Now Pasha winked at Yuliana, then wiped the roguishness from his face, and cleared his throat to address their father.
"The Kazakhs are incredibly unhappy with our reforms. They do not like our officials, or our attempts to give them land for farming. They're nomads, and believe we are forcing our culture down their throats. No amount of promising that we wish to strengthen the empire with them as our partners will work, in my opinion. Kasim's men are preparing for revolt."
"You are certain?"
"Yes, father. I heard it with my own ears. And my men, in their reconnaissance, confirmed."
"Well, then."
"You see,"
Yuliana said,
"I told you it was of the utmost importance."
"Am I done here?"
Pasha asked, looking to the door.
"No,"
Yuliana said. At the same time, the Tsar said,
"Yes."
"Wonderful," Pasha said. "Then I'm off."
He pushed away from the bookcase and opened the door.
"Don't forget the Imperial Council meeting this afternoon," the Tsar said.
Pasha paused.
"You will be there, Pasha."
He turned back to face the Tsar. The brightness that usually danced in Pasha's eyes went out.
"Right. Of course I will, father."
Yuliana very much doubted Pasha would make an appearance. He'd been on the Kazakh steppe for over a month, which far exceeded her brother's capacity for official duty. Not that he wasn't responsible, he was. It was just that Pasha did not like doing things as Cesarevich was supposed to do, especially in uniform, and under the Tsar's command. Pasha slipped out of the study to his freedom. The guards again shut the door. Yuliana scooted to the edge of her chair and picked up the map of the Kazakh territories she'd brought with her. She began to unfurl it on the Tsar's desk. The Tsar raised his hand.
"That will be unnecessary."
Yuliana scrunched her nose.
"All right."
She re-rolled the map.
"Then what are you going to do?"
"I'll decide after Pasha's birthday."
She whacked the map on the edge of the desk.
"Father, you can't sit around and wait. An uprising is brewing."
"Yuliana!"
The Tsar rose from behind the desk, slowly, purposefully. With every inch, the shadow on his face grew darker. Every second it took for him to reach his full height felt like a year.
"You are not Tsar. I am. And that means I am the one who knows best what to do for our empire."
But Yuliana met his steely glare with her own.
"Perhaps you're right, father. But let's suppose, for once, that the day comes when you are no longer Tsar. At least prepare Russia for it. At least lay the groundwork to protect Pasha and me."
She marched around to the Tsar's side of the desk, then past him, to the corner of the blue and gold rug that covered most of the study's floor.
What are you?
But the Tsar stopped his question as Yuliana rolled up a yard or so of the rug. Beneath it lay a trap door in the wood floor. She pulled a couple of pins from her hair and picked the lock within moments. The trap door opened with a creak and a puff of stale air.
Commence the crown's game,
she said as she retrieved a small but heavy chest from the hidden compartment. It looked, amazingly, like it had been painted and lacquered yesterday, as if magic repelled dust from its shiny surface. In fact, it probably did.
Give Russia an imperial enchanter, father, so we can fight if we need to. Do it for Pasha, for his birthday, even if he doesn't know.
The Tsar gripped the armrests of his chair.
But how do you know about enchanters, let alone that there are two now? That information was closely guarded and limited to myself and those who practice magic themselves. How could you know about the game?
Yuliana crossed the rug and set the chest on the Tsar's desk. Inside the chest, the ancient Rus quill and scroll lay dormant, but ready to record the next crown's game when the need arose. She glanced at her father's throne-like chair.
I know many things.
She didn't tell him that when she was very little, she used to hide in the large cabinet behind his desk and eavesdrop on his conversations, including the ones he'd have with himself when he thought the rest of the palace was asleep, about subjects like enchanters and the game, and a mysterious Tsar's collection, which Yuliana had deduced to be a library of ancient texts on magic, and presumably where her father had learned about enchanters and the crown's game in the first place, though she had never been able to locate this so-called Tsar's collection.
Pasha may be heir, she said to her father. But when you're gone, heaven forbid, he won't be able to rule Russia with charm alone. He'll need me, and he'll need an imperial enchanter.
It's been peaceful in Russia for years.
The peace we've known since Napoleon's end will soon be no more. Pasha's report is proof, and the Ottomans are rising again in the south. So will you do it? Will you declare the start of the game?
The Tsar hesitated for a heavy minute.
Do it for Pasha,
Yuliana said, and she meant it. She loved her brother ferociously, as much as the Tsar did. They'd both lay down their lives for him.
How old are you again, Yuliana?
15, father.
But you act like you're...
50, I know.
The Tsar chuckled.
For Pasha, eh?
He touched his finger to the lid of the wooden chest. It was the one thing that Yuliana had never been able to pick open, and now she understood why. It was governed by magic that would unlock only at the Tsar's touch. The lid eased itself open, as if lifted by an invisible hand. A long, majestic black feather, plucked from the wing of a sea eagle centuries ago, and a yellowed parchment scroll floated into the air. Yuliana gasped, for even though she knew of magic, she'd never actually witnessed it.
So does this mean you'll commence the game?
The Tsar nodded. She stared at the Rus quill and scroll. They spun lazily above the desk, the records of all past games, and so much of Russia's history just hovering.
But we probably shouldn't tell Pasha, she said.
The Tsar nodded again.
It's why I've never told you about the existence of enchanters and magic. I knew this generation would require a game. And I didn't know if the two of you, Pasha, really, would be able to stomach its viciousness.
But Yuliana could. Her mouth curved up at the corners. A smile was both a fierce and wistful thing. Chapter 6 2 days later, Nikolai sat on a palomino mare on Ovchinen Island. He had never been there before, even though it was only an hour's ferry ride from St. Petersburg. But when Pasha had asked where they ought to hunt, Ovchinen Island had sprung from Nikolai's tongue before his mind could catch up with the idea. He had no inkling where it had come from. But it turned out to be a grand decision. The sky was clear. The forest was dappled in red and gold, as it was wont to do in these early days of October, and the hounds were salivating for a chase. Nikolai watched as Pasha, smiling atop a white stallion, surveyed the land in front of him. The Tsar had wanted Pasha to stay at the Winter Palace, to listen to the mundane demands of farmers whose crops had been damaged by blight. But Pasha had escaped, and here, in the countryside, the Cesarevich rode wild and free from royal expectations.
"What are we hunting for today?" Pasha asked. "I believe grouse, pheasants and mink are all plentiful in this part of the country," Nikolai said. "Whatever your Imperial Highness desires."
"Your Imperial Highness? Why are you being so formal?"
Pasha glanced over his shoulder at the rest of the hunting party, the sons of barons and counts and other lesser nobility, all social-climbing buffoons, in Nikolai's opinion.
"Don't do it on their account," Pasha said. "In fact, I rather wish you wouldn't."
Nikolai bowed his head.
"As you wish, my heavenly sovereign, crown prince of all Russia."
Pasha laughed. Nikolai couldn't maintain a straight face any longer, and he smiled. This was why they were friends, because Nikolai was the only one who didn't kowtow at the Cesarevich's feet. They had met when Pasha was 12, and Nikolai 13. Nikolai had been crouched in the dirt in Senaya Square, a sordid part of town, playing cards with a handful of other boys of questionable origin. He'd been betting money he didn't have, but he hadn't cared, for he'd long since mastered the ability to change the face of each card to whatever he wanted, before the dealer flipped it from the deck. Nikolai lost often enough that the others didn't know better. It was just that when Nikolai won, he always made sure to win more than he'd given up before. After a particularly horrendous hand of cards, in which Nikolai sacrificed a painful sum of rubles, an unfamiliar voice piped up from behind a nearby building.
"Can I play?"
"Who are you?"
Stanislav, the leader of the gang, said.
My name is Pasha."
There was a tremble as he answered, but that wasn't uncommon around Stanislav, who at 13 was already as stout as a dock worker. The other boys turned to survey the new arrival. They looked him up and down, from the mess of his blonde hair to the torn knees of his trousers.
"It's pay to play,"
Stanislav said.
"I have some coins."
Pasha produced a small pouch. It clinked heavily. Satisfied by the sound, Stanislav waved him over and began to deal him in. But there was something oddly familiar about Pasha, like Nikolai had seen him before. He couldn't place him, though. Then he looked at Pasha's boots, which were covered by a thin layer of dust. Nikolai flicked his fingers, just barely, and a small puff of air blew the dust away. Pasha's boots were shiny and completely unscuffed, and they weren't fashioned from cheap leather. No, they'd been master-crafted from sumptuous burgundy calfskin, the kind reserved for nobility. Nobility with a lot of money. This Nikolai knew from a short stint polishing shoes for a cobbler. And from the gleam in Stanislav's eye, the extravagance of Pasha's boots hadn't slipped his notice either. An hour later, Pasha had won a fair sum.
"Thank you for the game," he said too politely. "But I'm afraid it's time for me to be going."
He gathered up the coins and crumpled bills from the center of the circle into his pouch, and stood to take his leave.
Not so fast, pretty boy.
Stanislav rose, and he towered over Pasha.
I think you cheated us.
What?
Pasha reddened. He jammed his hands into his hair, tugging frantically on it, and in doing so, flattened the blonde waves into something neater than they'd been when he arrived.
Oh, blazes,
Nikolai thought, as he put Pasha's fine-boned features together with the now tamed hair.
Pasha is the nickname for Pavel, and Pavel is the name of the Cesarevich.
That was why he looked so familiar, despite the smudges of dirt on his face. Nikolai had seen Pasha with the rest of the imperial family in a parade only a week before.
What the devil was the Cesarevich doing out of the palace, trying to pass himself off as a commoner? And in Tsarnaya Square, of all places?
Stanislav opened and closed a meaty fist.
I saw you slipping in your own cards, he said to Pasha. What do you think I am? Stupid? Just 'cause I can't afford dainty shoes? I don't know what you think you saw, but I didn't cheat.
Pasha backed into the wall of the building behind him. Nikolai stepped forward.
Give him all the money, he said to Pasha. That'll appease him. Don't speak for me, Kazakh!
Stanislav spat. Nikolai's jaw tightened, but he didn't send Stanislav careening through the air like he wanted to. Instead, he held out his hand to Pasha, who dumped all his coins and bills into Nikolai's palm. Nikolai set them on the ground in front of Stanislav. Then Nikolai emptied out his own pockets of all his hard-earned cash. True, Nikolai had actually cheated, but it didn't mean he hadn't worked hard for it. It took a great deal of restraint to charm the cards in his favor only once every five or so hands, and added that to the pile of Pasha's money.
There, Stanislav, you can have my take, too. And consider the debt paid, all right? Besides, you don't want trouble with Pasha. If he has fancy shoes, you can bet he has fancy parents, too, with connections to the sorts of people you don't want poking around in your business.
Stanislav crossed his arms. He ran his tongue along the bottom edge of his teeth, and then he scooped up Nikolai's and Pasha's money.
Fine, Kazakh, but get out of my square, and don't either of you ever come back.
Pasha and Nikolai took off running. They didn't stop until Nikolai led them to the banks of the Neva River, to the Winter Palace, its green, gold, and white facade like a Russian version of Versailles. Pasha gasped.
You know who I am?
His face was flushed from exertion, and his hair wild again. Nikolai shrugged, still breathing heavily from running so hard and so far.
I won't tell anyone. I thank you. Of course, but one piece of advice,
Nikolai said as he glanced again at Pasha's two shiny shoes.
If you're going to sneak out, you'll need better disguises. For one, your boots. And, well, to be honest, everything you're wearing is much too nice. Even the holes in your trousers are symmetrical. I could help, though. I know a thing or two about clothing.
They had been best friends ever since. Now, on Ovchinen Island, Nikolai sensed his friend's same fatigue with the pomp and protocol of court life. Pasha sighed.
Oh, I don't care what we hunt. Grouse, pheasants. Pick one and set the hounds off into the woods with the rest of them.
He gestured a gloved hand at the preening noblemen and horses behind him.
Then you and I can go off in search of adventure.
Nikolai laughed. Pasha only participated in half the hunts that were organized for him. The other half he spent wandering through unexplored forests, skipping rocks and rivers, and dozing to the music of rustling leaves. For Pasha's sake, Nikolai hoped the Tsar lived forever. Pasha would wilt if he were ever locked behind the Winter Palace's doors, forced to actually live like the royal he was born to be.
Hey-o!
Nikolai called behind him to Anatoly Golubin, son of one of the visiting barons from Moscow.
His Highness has decided we hunt for grouse today. He wishes your party to head for the north, while we shall head to the east. You can take the hounds.
Anatoly grunted unhappily from his horse. But the men bowed as Pasha dug his heels into his horse and took off toward the eastern woods. Nikolai followed. They slowed the pace of their horses as they entered the woods. But soon the forest floor grew so dense with greenery and fallen trees that they had to dismount entirely. They secured their horses to a couple of sturdy maples and pushed forward on foot.
Any idea where we're going?
Nikolai asked as he walked around a log in his path.
None whatsoever, Pasha said.
He made a show of balancing on the log Nikolai had sidestepped, then hurdled over a boulder. Nikolai clapped in mock applause. Pasha laughed.
You're just jealous that you weren't born as graceful as I. Oh, you want a demonstration of grace?
Nikolai hopped onto a jagged rock and leaped onto another, landing on one foot. Then he slipped off the mossy face of the rock and nearly twisted his ankle in the gravel. Pasha hooted. Nikolai grimaced. Perhaps the Romanovs really were blessed with more grace. Or, at the very least, better balance.
Don't pout, Nikolai. You can't be the best at everything.
Pasha grinned as he pulled Nikolai off the ground.
I'm not, Nikolai thought. Far from it.
But it was impossible to sulk as they continued through the forest, which, like many that dotted the Russian countryside, was full of slender white birches with delicate leaves that glittered yellow in the autumnal sun. A creek burbled through the grass, and Nikolai was again struck by what a marvelous decision coming to Ovchinin Island had turned out to be. A pheasant shot out of the bushes and into the air behind them. Nikolai's gun wasn't loaded, but he snatched a pebble from the ground and hurled it at the pheasant. It dropped out of the sky as if it had been hit by a bullet. Pasha jogged over.
Did you just do what I think you did?
Yes.
Incroyable, Pasha breathed. And you say you aren't good at everything. There are moments when I wonder if you aren't entirely human.
Nikolai flinched, although the comment shouldn't have bothered him, for he hadn't used any magic to hit the pheasant.
I wish I could be you sometimes, Pasha said.
No, trust me, you don't. Nikolai climbed through the shrubs, retrieved the bird, and stuffed it into a sack.
I do, but I won't argue with you.
Pasha inhaled deeply, then sank down onto a patch of dry moss, closed his eyes, and leaned his head back against a nearby log.
How glad I am to be out of the palace. I think when I inherit the throne, I shall abdicate immediately.
Nikolai perched on the log next to him.
You'd do no such thing, and you know it. Ah, but I can dream.
Pasha opened his eyes.
The pressure is not only from my father these days, it's also my mother. She thinks it's urgent that we find me a wife. I know more than a few who are willing.
Nikolai nudged the prince with his boot. Every girl in the Russian Empire would sell her soul to be the Cesarevich's Cinderella. Pasha responded by yanking Nikolai's boot straight off his foot.
Hey!
Pasha laughed and hurled the boot into the shrubbery.
You know I want more from a wife than a girl fawning at my feet. Well, all I want is a boot to cover my feet.
Nikolai hobbled through the grass and rocks in the direction his shoe had disappeared. Then the peace of the morning was shattered by a crash of thunder. It was so violent, it shook the leaves on the birches and vibrated through the ground. Nikolai and Pasha both leaped up. Nikolai lurched through the bushes, struggling to pull on his boot while squinting at the sky. It was still bright blue, save for a black cloud above the easternmost side of the forest. A sharp bolt of lightning split the azure, and for a moment, Nikolai wondered whether it could ever be pieced back together again.
"We need to take cover!"
he yelled over the next crack of thunder. Another bolt of lightning flashed, and this one struck a tree in the distance, black smoke instantly feathering into the sky. Then, in a brief period of quiet, a girl's scream carried from the east with the wind. Nikolai leaned in the direction from which it came. It did not sound like a call for help. It sounded like a battle cry. No sooner had her scream left the air than thunder and lightning stormed down in rapid succession. There was no rain, though, only fire, bursting from the lightning to the trees until the sky to the east was obscured by orange and yellow and black.
"The girl! We have to help her!"
Pasha said.
"Stay here! I'll go!"
He couldn't let Pasha run straight into the center of a storm like that. What if something happened to him? But Pasha was already running deeper into the woods.
"Damn it!"
Nikolai chased after him, but his boot was unlaced and he tripped in a puddle of mud. Pasha hurtled onward and disappeared between the trees. Nikolai glared at his laces, and they whipped into action and secured themselves in a double knot. Then he sprinted as fast as he could, weaving through bushes and leaping over fallen trees, pushing deeper into ash-thick air with every stride. By the time he caught up, Pasha was already at a standstill, not 100 feet from the edge of the flames.
"What is this?"
Pasha pointed at the ring of blazing fallen trees before them, a perfect circle.
"I don't know,"
Nikolai said. But there was no way this could have been an accident of nature. He spun around, searching. Something had done this on purpose. Someone. He could feel the otherness weighing on the air, thick and heavy. And again, that taste of cinnamon tinged with the portent of death. Nikolai swiped at his mouth, as if that would obliterate the taste and foreboding. The pile of fiery tree trunks began to move, lifting from the center. He and Pasha both staggered back and drew their hunting knives, and Nikolai positioned himself between Pasha and the inferno. He would not lose the future Tsar of the Russian Empire without a fight, although what he was fighting, he hadn't a clue. The fire grew hotter and burned at such reckless speed. The branches in the middle of the pile collapsed to embers the instant a flame licked them. Then, as the blaze devoured the remaining length of the trees, lashing its way out to the edge of the circle, a small figure rose from the center, itself engulfed in flames.
"You see, Father?"
a girl's voice said calmly, almost cheerfully.
"I told you I'd master it today. Fight fire with fire, not water or ice."
Then she whistled a short tune, and the fire on her arms, her torso, her skirt, snuffed out. The only flames left were on top of her head, a wind-tossed mess of loose red curls and one lock of black. She whistled again, and the fire on the fallen trees went out as well. Pasha stepped backward onto a leaf. It crunched, ever so softly, but the girl whirled around.
"Who's there?"
Nikolai and Pasha stood frozen, and not just metaphorically. She had iced their feet to the ground.
"Who are you?"
Pasha whispered as he gaped at the cinder-smudged girl. She stared at them for another moment. Then she spun on her heel and fled, a streak of red hair and grey dress dashing into the woods and disappearing into its shadowed depths. But Nikolai didn't need her to tell them who she was. He already knew. He had never seen the girl before, but she had to be the one. The other enchanter in the game. Chapter 7. The Tsar's message came to Sergei as the lightning storm in the forest ended. The note, on Imperial stationery, was brief but clear.
Bring your enchanter to Bolshebnoi Duplo on 13 October. The crown's game will then commence.
What? The crown's game? Sergei sagged onto the threshold of the cottage. It couldn't be. All this time, he'd assumed Vika was the only enchanter. He'd sent word to Galina when he discovered Vika's abilities, but she'd never informed him that she had an enchanter in her tutelage as well. He clenched his fists, so typical of his sister. His anger was short-lived, though, for he did not have the energy to devote to it. Besides, what could be done about it now? Because Galina had kept from Sergei that she, too, had a student, there'd be no reason for Sergei to think another enchanter existed. It was the way it was supposed to be. When the Imperial Enchanter died, his or her magic returned to Russia's wellspring, and there it recharged and eventually sought out another vessel in which to grow. It was rare that more than a single enchanter existed at once. As far as Sergei knew, it had happened only a handful of times in 1,000 years since Russia was born. And he'd immersed himself so completely in the small sphere of his and Vika's life here on Opchinan Island that he hadn't paid attention to whether another enchanter's otherness lingered in Russia's air.
But now my Vikochka is not just one, but one of two, Sergei thought.
And he knew how the game always ended. There was only room enough for one Imperial Enchanter, but he or she needed access to the full force of Russia's magic, and therefore the magic killed the loser of the game. Sergei sat paralyzed, his trousers covered in dirt.
How can this be? Especially when I thought I had 2 years to train her, to spend with her. Now I have only 3 days.
And worse yet, how could he tell Vika when he could hardly handle the truth himself? He needed time to think. He looked to where the lightning storm had just abated, and he hiked into the woods in the opposite direction. Chapter 8. Nikolai stumbled into the kitchen at the Zagrevsky house immediately upon returning from Avchinan Island. His eyes searched the room, but there was no one around. Perhaps Galina had decided to lunch at a restaurant with some of her society friends, as she often did, and the staff had been able to take a break. Thank goodness for all his mentor's ridiculous obligations. Nikolai fumbled for a glass of water and drank it greedily. A good portion of its contents sloshed onto his woolen breeches. He filled another glass and gulped that down too, before he dropped into the lone wooden chair in the corner. A few minutes later, a servant girl walked into the kitchen with an armful of freshly laundered aprons. She started when she saw Nikolai, nearly dropped the aprons on the dusty stone floor. Then she tossed them onto the countertop and hurried to kneel at his side.
Nikolai, you're shaking. Are you all right? Did something happen on the hunt?
Nikolai rubbed his face with both hands. He could tell Renata what he'd seen. Besides Galina, Renata was the only one who knew of his abilities. Not that he'd shared them with her purposely. 2 years ago, he had forgotten to lock his bedroom door while he was reassembling a music box with his mind. These disassembly and rebuilding projects had begun when he was a child, as lessons from Galina, and Renata had walked in with clean linens for his bed, while the music box's cranks and gears were suspended in midair.
"Oh,"
she had said,
"forgive me, Master Nikolai. I...
The pieces of the music box had gone clattering onto the desk. He'd snatched them up and stuffed them into the pocket of his waistcoat.
"It's not what it seems."
She looked down at the scuffed toes of her boots.
"That's they were floating of their own accord?" "Of course not, Master Nikolai. I could make you forget what you saw."
He raised a finger to his temple. She trembled.
"No need, sir. I promise I won't tell a soul."
"How can I trust you?"
"I read tea leaves, Master Nikolai. I don't fear what you do."
Nikolai lowered his finger.
"You read leaves?"
He'd never met anyone who could do that, or anyone who'd admit to it. The Russian Orthodox Church had quashed magic as superstition and heresy centuries ago.
"Yes,"
Renata said.
"Show me."
He followed her to the kitchen, and Renata poured him a cup of tea. When he drained it, she studied the gnarled black leaves that remained. Then she shook her head so violently, her braids lashed across her face.
"Perhaps it would be better if you made me forget what I saw in your room, sir."
Nikolai frowned, then looked from the teacup to Renata and back again.
"No. There's something in those leaves that you're frightened to relay. Tell me. I won't hold it against you."
She swallowed hard.
"I give you my word."
Which, to Nikolai, was a serious thing. Because if your word could not be trusted, you were nothing as a gentleman, and that was its own dreadful shame. Renata nodded. But she took another moment before she spoke, her voice shaky.
"You see there is a cluster of leaves on the left, but a single one, isolated, on the right. It means you're lonely."
She hunched over the cup, as if waiting for Nikolai to cuff her. She had been hit on numerous occasions by Galina for much lesser offences. But Nikolai only chewed his lip.
"I see."
It was an audacious thing for a servant girl to say, but it was nothing particularly remarkable. Any one of the servants could have made a similar observation. After all, Nikolai spent an inordinate amount of time in his room on his own. Doing what? They did not know.
"What about the jagged leaf along the bottom?"
he asked. Renata's eyes widened, and she shook her head, jangling her braids yet again.
"Tell me."
Nikolai restrained himself from reassuring her not to be afraid. He needed to know what the leaf meant.
"The jagged one represents death. You were born of death, and..."
"And what?"
"And death will... it will follow you always. The bottom leaf is the path of your life, and this one is a long and jagged blade."
Nikolai had shuddered then, and he'd felt as if his heart stopped for more than several beats. But he had been grateful that she was willing to tell him, despite her fear of reprisal. Perhaps the fact that beneath the elegant clothing and practiced airs, he was a poor boy from nowhere, gave her a reason to have faith in him. In truth, he was as much a nobody as she was. Nikolai had smiled sadly at how clumsily he fit into this life. So began their friendship, and now they were huddled together in the kitchen once again, as they had been many times in the past.
"Nikolai."
Renata pried his hands from his face.
"Tell me, did something happen on the hunt? Is the Cesarevich all right?"
Nikolai hunched forward, so close to Renata that his head almost rested on hers.
Pasha is fine.
She released the breath she'd been holding.
And you? Are you all right?
That I do not know.
Why not? What happened?
I saw her, Renata. I know who the other enchanter is.
A tremor ran through him, although it was disconcertingly hot rather than cold. A true fever chill.
Is she so formidable?
She rose from a bonfire all aflame, as if she were a phoenix.
Renata's grip on his hand tightened.
You're as pale as one of the Countess's porcelain figurines.
Nikolai slumped farther into the hard wooden chair. How in blazes would he beat the girl when the day for the game finally came? The girl need only cast one fiery lightning storm, like the one on Opchinan Island, and the Tsar would declare it all over.
Her magic is enchantment beyond my grasp, he said.
It isn't,
Renata said.
You wield fearsome power of another kind. You can see through walls, remember?
It's not the same.
Renata shook him.
Precisely. Perhaps her power is elemental because she lives on that island. But yours is commanding in a cosmopolitan way. You can manipulate an entire orchestra at the opera, instruments and all. You can rearrange the insides of a clock to make it a microscope. You've simply learned to use magic differently.
Nikolai buried his face in his hands.
I hope you're right. I hope so, too.
Renata reached up and brushed her fingers through his hair. She had never been so bold before, and Nikolai did not know what to do with the gesture. She let her touch linger, then withdrew her hand and lowered her voice.
And I hope this is not where the jagged leaf in your cup comes to pass.
Chapter 9. In the library on the far side of the Winter Palace, Pasha paced in front of a leather armchair, his footsteps so fervent, there was already a deep path carved in the burgundy carpet.
Who was she?
He asked himself aloud.
What was she?
Was she even real?
The girl on Opchinan Island had fled as soon as she spotted Pasha and Nikolai, and the ice at their feet had melted instantly the moment she was gone. Then Nikolai had grabbed Pasha's arm and rushed them from the woods. The rest of the hunting party had somehow not seen the lightning storm and fire. It was as if a drape of invisibility had been tossed over the small section of forest in which the flames were contained, and Pasha and Nikolai had happened to be close enough to be inside its folds. And yet, Nikolai had refused to talk about it. At first, Pasha thought he'd imagined the girl entirely. But all the color had drained from Nikolai's face, which was how Pasha knew that Nikolai had, in fact, witnessed the same miracle he had, and Nikolai hadn't uttered a syllable as they sprinted to their horses and galloped out of the forest. Then, once it became apparent that the remainder of the hunting party had seen nothing out of the ordinary, Pasha had been prevented from speaking up, because if he had, they would think he was prone to hallucinations, and that was not an acceptable reputation for a Cesarevich, even one who had no desire to one day be Tsar. Which was how Pasha ended up pacing alone in the palace library, working out the morning's events on his own.
There was lightning, a ring of fallen trees on fire.
Someone rapped on the open door. Yuliana peered inside the library.
Are you talking to yourself again?
Oh, Yuliana, I didn't hear you come in.
Pasha ran his fingers through his hair, disheveling it even more than fleeing the forest had. It stuck up in dark blonde tufts, like peaks of torched meringue from one of their father's many banquets.
You're muttering to yourself again.
She tapped her sharp fingernails on the doorframe. Yuliana was 2 years younger than Pasha, but most of the time she seemed to think herself twice his age.
The servants could hear. You don't want them thinking the Cesarevich is a madman.
Pasha sighed.
I think they're rather accustomed to my mannerisms by now. If they don't already think me mad, they will not think it because of today.
Yuliana tilted her head.
Suit yourself, but at the very least, close the door.
She dipped in a perfunctory curtsy on her way out of the library, then reached for the heavy wooden door and shut it fast behind her. It plowed into the frame with a decisive thump. Pasha shook his head as soon as she was gone. Sometimes he wondered how the Tsar could be his father, although it was obvious the Tsar was Yuliana's. His sister and father were cast from the same steely resolve, and recently Yuliana had even seemed the sterner of the two. But back to the girl. Pasha began to pace the well-worn groove of the carpet again.
She rose as if the fire were nothing. No, as if she were part of the fire.
He tugged on his hair again. The girl's appearance both unnerved and intrigued him. Had she already been there in the woods when the fire began? Or had she come out of the lightning, the cause of the very fire from which Pasha had sought to rescue her? As quickly as he had begun, Pasha ceased his pacing and crossed the library to a towering bookshelf. The entire room was lined, floor to cathedral ceiling, with books, from old church documents sealed in airtight cases to new treatises on politics and military strategy. What Pasha was looking for, though, was information on the occult. There would be no books on the subject in the Imperial Public Library, but the church had ordered any materials on magic destroyed centuries ago. But the palace's private library was a different matter. If magic did indeed exist, and if there were books written about it, they would be here. As Pasha climbed the ladder to the upper reaches of the wall, a giddiness fluttered within him. Perhaps investigating the girl and her magic was one thing he could do better than Nikolai, who excelled at pretty much everything else, from dancing to sharpshooting to understanding the intricacies of bridge building. Not that Pasha was jealous. He didn't begrudge Nikolai his talents at all, and in actuality admired him. But he could not help feeling the thrill of a little healthy competition, and Nikolai had seemed frightened of the girl, whereas Pasha had felt nothing but wonderment. Pasha grinned as he perused the highest shelves. There were dusty spines of poetry from the last century, and novels from abroad in French, English, and German. How had he not seen these before? Out of habit, he reached for several, but he stopped short of pulling them out. This was not the time to lose himself in fiction and the study of foreign literature. He pushed the ladder sideways, for it had wheels connected to a track on the top and bottom, until he found a row of books on Roman and Greek mythology, followed 4 shelves below by European fairy tales, and then on the 5th by Russian folklore. The last book on the 5th shelf was a thick leather volume titled Russian Mystics and the Tsars.
Et voilà,
Pasha said to himself. He pulled the book from its place between Vodyanoi, the catfish king, and The Death of Koschei, the Immortal, unleashing a flurry of dust, possibly dating from earlier than the previous Tsar. He waved the dust away and slid down the sides of the ladder, not bothering with the runs. His feet landed on the carpet with a solid thump. Pasha opened the book and sank into his favorite armchair at the same time, his movements easy and graceful, a subconscious compilation of all his experiences growing up in the imperial household, from participating in formal court functions to learning to fence, from watching ballet to being reprimanded when his own posture faltered. He flipped to the table of contents. The page was yellow and crackled with age. Chapter 1. Mysticism in Ancient Russia. Chapter 2. Mystics, Enchanters, and Faith Healers. Chapter 3. Extinction of Nymphs and Fairies. Chapter 4. Power, the Wellspring, and the Crown's Game. He stopped skimming when he saw the subject of Chapter 15, the last one in the book. Mysticism in Modern Times. Pasha smiled so broadly, it was as if he'd discovered the secret to eternal life. This was the sort of book one ought to read in pieces, to properly appreciate and savor each bit. And yet he wanted to devour it whole, messily and all at once. But he didn't, because he was the Cesarevich, and crown princes had better manners than that. Even when it came to tomes that promised to unveil an entire new world inside. I should, however, at least have the luxury of reading out of order, he thought. And he thumbed his way to the last chapter, for although this book had been written ages ago, he figured this was the best place to try to understand the girl, what she did, and what she was. Pasha hooked a leather ottoman with his foot and dragged it closer, then settled deep into his armchair for a long afternoon of reading. But he did not admit to himself, either aloud or even quietly in his own head, that he was interested in the girl for more than just her magic. Chapter 10.
They could be coming for me right now,
Vika thought as she cast shields around the cottage. Father had warned her not to be seen using magic, and now she'd been caught, and these boys could be summoning a mob to burn her at the stake. She fortified the windows a third time, especially the ones in Sergei's bedroom. He didn't deserve to die for her indiscretion. He didn't deserve to die at all. Where was he? She ran outside again, for it was possible that he'd arrived while she was inside and been unable to get in, given how tightly she'd protected their home. She saw him emerge from the forest just as she crossed the threshold of the cottage.
Father! You're all right!
She lifted the edge of the shield around the front door to let him in. He stumbled into the entry.
No, I'm not all right.
Were you attacked?
Vika secured the protection charm and rushed to his side. Sergei was a big man, but right now he seemed small. Not literally, but he didn't take up as much space in the entry as he normally did. On the contrary, it was as if the space pushed on him and shoved him inside himself.
I'm sorry, Vika said. I didn't mean to be seen, but I got carried away, and...
You were seen?
Yes, and now they've come after you.
Her father laughed, but in a mirthless way.
Oh, Vikochka, don't worry about being seen, because things are so much worse than that.
He tromped away from her and into their tiny kitchen. Vika rushed in on his heels.
What are you talking about?
You will have to meet my sister soon, as if that weren't bad enough.
You have a sister?
In St. Petersburg. It's all related to...
He sank into a chair at their small dining table.
I need some kvass first.
Vika brought a bottle of Sergei's homemade brew and poured him a mug. He downed it in a single gulp.
We leave tomorrow for Bolshevnoi Duplo, he said.
What? The Enchanted Hollow?
Vika knew the name like a pilgrim knew of Jerusalem. Every country that still believed in the old ways, that is, had a physical, mystical heart from which its magic emanated. And Russia's heart was Bolshevnoi Duplo. Vika leaned across the table.
You know where Bolshevnoi Duplo is?
The name had always sounded to her captivating and wicked all at once.
Yes. Knowing its location is part of my duty as your mentor.
Your duty? Why exactly are we going there?
It is where you will take the oath for the Crown's game.
The Crown's game?
Vika did not even bother to inflect her tone upward this time. For everything now was a question mark. She was beyond using punctuation.
I don't know what that is.
I didn't think there was a need for it. I thought you were the only enchanter. But you're not. And that means there will be a test. A competition.
Vika wrapped her fingers tightly around her father's mug. The glaze on the ceramic heated at her touch.
There's another enchanter, and there will be a competition.
Sergei didn't meet her eyes. He reached for a stale slice of bread on the table instead.
I'm in as much shock as you are. I had no clue my sister was mentoring an enchanter. I haven't heard from her since I left St. Petersburg 25 years ago.
He tore the bread into pieces, and then into smaller and smaller pieces, until it disintegrated into a pile of fine crumbs.
What aren't you telling me, Father?
He scooped all the crumbs into his hand and crushed them.
Just say it.
He closed his eyes.
The Tsar can have only one imperial enchanter. The enchanter who loses the game dies.
No. Why?
The mug in Vika's hands melted from pottery to clay.
Each country's wellspring emits a finite amount of magic at any given time. It is not without limits. So the number of enchanters must be limited as well.
But there have apparently been two of us all these years, not to mention you and your sister.
Yes, but the minor charms we conjure are relatively inconsequential, her father said. As for you and the other enchanter, you've been splitting Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic between you. That's fine while you're training. In fact, it was likely better that you didn't have access to all of it while you were young and learning to control your powers. However, to serve the Tsar, and to protect the Empire from its enemies, the Imperial Enchanter will need all of Russia's magic, especially since Bolshevnoi Duplo is no longer as potent as it was when the people of our country still adhered to the old ways. The Imperial Enchanter must be the only major conduit of what magic remains. There cannot be any dilution.
It hadn't occurred to Vika that there might be an occasion when she couldn't execute an enchantment for lack of magic. It had always been there when she needed it. But then again, she'd never attempted anything on as large a scale as Sergei was implying. She hadn't a clue how much power it might take to lead a war.
I could steal Morocco's magic, Vika said.
But the joke came out desperate and flat. Her father scarcely pretended to smile.
Even Yakov Zinchenko wasn't powerful enough to steal magic from so far away. And magic is loyal to its countrymen, for it is those very countrymen whose belief sows it. Morocco's magic wouldn't answer to a Russian.
The kitchen grew colder. Vika hugged her arms around herself. But why did death on the journey to becoming Imperial Enchanter shock her? Her father had warned her, hadn't he? There had even been a lesson when Vika was younger, a horrible lesson, in which he'd asked her to resurrect a stillborn wolverine pup. Vika had clenched her fists and gritted her teeth, and mustered all the power she had to focus on the pup's heart, trying to feel if there were anything broken inside. Anything she could move back together. She checked its muscles, its lungs, its stomach, liver, and every other organ, only to be met with silence. It turned out that had been the entire purpose of Sergei's lesson. to show her that death was real and an inescapable part of the Imperial Enchanter's job. So it should be no great revelation that dancing with death, defying death, could be part of the Imperial Enchanter's initiation.